Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the All Day SJ Show. I'm your host, Steven Johnson, and we got something special for you over the next few episodes. When I started the show, I promised to give the fans a voice when it came to Chicago sports and everything else in general. As the first season of the show wraps up, that time is now. Joining me right now is a knowledgeable brother. He's very active on social media when it comes to evaluating the game, specifically the NBA and the MLB. His name is Christian Dorsey. You can follow him on Twitter at ChristianMD85, all one word. Chris, what's going on, my brother?
Not much. Thanks so much for having me on, Steve. I appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for coming on. Like I said, you a knowledgeable brother on Twitter, man. You got a lot of good stuff to say, and that's what the All Day SJ Show is. It gives everybody a voice. It gives everybody a platform, and I appreciate you taking the time out to join my show. I mentioned earlier that you're very active on Twitter when it comes to evaluating sports. So let's start with the NBA. What's your opinion of the season thus far, and what observations do you have when it comes to contenders for the NBA championship?
You know, this season has been a fun season so far. You know, the young guys are playing well. You look at Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and all those guys. Even Lonzo is putting up a pretty nice line, even though he's not shooting the ball well. In terms of the contenders, you got Cleveland. I mean, they're just going to run through the East, it seems like. You got Boston. Boston is right there. Kyrie is playing real well on his own.
Right.
Al Horford playing solid defense and leading that team. And out West, I mean, who could have seen this coming with Houston? I just figured with James Harden and Chris Paul, there'd be some issues with both of those guys being so ball-dominant. But playing together, they're rolling. And
right.
You just can't forget about, you know, the Warriors. The Warriors are, you know, one of the most unstoppable forces we ever seen.
Right.
Just got to hope that Steph can get his ankle right.
Absolutely, Chris. I agree with you, man. I think the only thing really that can stop the Golden State Warriors are injuries. If you recall 2 years ago when the Cavs actually stunned them and won a title, Steph had lingering injury issues all season. And I'll be the one to say it, 90% is going to be Cavs, Warriors, part four. But one team that I would like to mention in the West, I think the San Antonio Spurs are, you know, the biggest threat, in my opinion, to the Golden State Warriors' dominance. I've always been a proponent of the fundamentals of the game. And even though Golden State, like you said, is one of the most dominating forces we have, they're still, at their core, a small ball team. They don't have the front court size that I think San Antonio has. San Antonio has a skilled front court, whether that's a returning Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, Pau Gasol. They have size and skill in that front court that I think would be a difficult matchup for Golden State. And I hope that's a rematch of the conference finals. I know the sexy pick is to have Houston go in there. But I just you can't underestimate Pop as a coach. And you can't underestimate the system. Those guys have been running that system for almost 20 years now. And it's interesting to see a battle of the minds of Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich. To your point in the East, go ahead, man.
I totally agree. You can never count out the Spurs.
Right.
And Greg Popovich. One thing I worry about with the Spurs, they seem to lack like a dynamic backcourt play.
Right.
So Tony Parker's getting up there in age. Manu's up there in age. Murray is still kind of young. So that's what I worry about, the backcourt play. But you can never count Pop out.
Oh, absolutely. And like if you ask me today, I would agree with you 100%. I would say the Warriors in 6 or 7 games. I think, believe it or not, I think the Warriors are more susceptible to losing in the West than the Cavs are in the East. Like you said, the Cavs can just run right through the East. It's getting to that point now where Cleveland, man, like LeBron can take his 2-week vacations. You know, a guy like Derek or a guy like D-Wade, some important person to their lineup can get injured, and they'll still find a way to coast to the Eastern Conference Finals, the number one seed and all that. The only person, like you said, the only team I really think that can give them some go is the Kyrie Irving-led Boston Celtics team. Now, the Gordon Hayward injury was devastating to that team. But Kyrie's just, he's backing up basically what he inferred, man. I can be the guy on my own without LeBron. I can lead a team. I can be the best player on a contending team. And I think he is solidly in the running for most valuable player this year. And
for sure.
Absolutely, man. And I'm rooting for him. Like, at the end of the day, you have to respect someone that basically goes to the best player in the league and goes, I don't need you. And he's willing to go out and prove that. Like, there's something about that that's very respectable, in my opinion. Some people might call it stupid. Don't get me wrong, Chris. But that's what the NBA is lacking nowadays, that competition, man. A lot of people...
Oh, I agree.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, a lot of people complain about, like, it's no parity in the league. It's so top-heavy. You know, Kyrie and all these other guys, man, they want to bring it back to going at these dudes. Like, you know, let's get it on. Let's compete. And I really respect that about him. What's your opinion on that?
Oh, I love what Kyrie did. Kyrie is probably he's one of my favorite guys in the league to watch. I mean, he's an explosive scorer. People say he can't pass. I think he's an underrated passer. His effort level on defense has risen this year. And like you said, you know, there's not enough competitiveness in the league right now, it seems. Everybody wants to play with their buddies. And what Kyrie did was old school, and I like what Kyrie did. Let me go back a little bit to that Hayward injury. That's kind of been a blessing in disguise, low-key, as gruesome as the injury was.
Interesting.
I mean, you look at a guy like Jason Tatum, who might not have gotten that opportunity, and he's flourishing right now when we talk about young guys, him and Jaylen Brown.
Right.
So those Celtics are going to be there for years to come, it seems.
Yeah, Chris, and that was actually a perfect segue to my next question for you. You mentioned that Kyrie's one of your favorite players to watch. In addition to Kyrie, who are some of your other favorite players to watch? And in your opinion, and it's strictly opinion, ain't no one going to be mad for your opinion, who do you think is the best player in the game right now?
Some of my favorite players to watch. Well, my top guy to watch is cool right now being a fan. It's definitely D-Rose.
Right.
He brought the game back for me. You know, I was a big fan of T-Mac and AI. When those guys were kind of done, there was nobody there. And D-Rose came in and just took that mantle for me. So I'm going to ride with D-Rose until the wheels fall off.
That's cool.
You look around, like I said, Kyrie. I love guard play, so Dame Lillard is another one. I mean, his ability to get hot and start cooking from anywhere, his handle. Steph, you know, you can't go wrong with Steph. I mean, he's probably the best shooter we've ever seen. And I'm liking these young big guys. I like Big Cat. Down up in Minnesota doing his thing.
Right.
You look at a guy like Joel Embiid, who has it all. I mean, you just worry if his body can hold up. But those are some of my favorite guys to watch right now. Best player in the league, I mean, you can't go wrong with LeBron.
Okay.
I mean, he's been doing it. This is, year 15, and he looks as good as he ever been. I mean, his jumper's falling. His command of the game, it's just fun to watch. But the guy, I forgot one other guy who is probably playing the best ball in the NBA right now. James Harden is cooking right now. And I love watching James. And he's making a claim as the best player in the league right now.
Yeah, man. You know, the beard, he doing his thing, man. Some people say he should have won MVP last season over Russell Westbrook. And it's like he looks like he's a man on a mission to get that award this year. I found it interesting. You said you were kind of concerned about the matching of Chris Paul and James Harden this year, and I think a lot of people shared those concerns with you because a lot of people don't remember last season James Harden was the point guard, listed as the point guard, ran the offense, all that, and then you bring in arguably the best point guard of our generation to his team, and you always wonder how that's going to work when you take the ball out of Harden's hands and put it more in Chris Paul's. You know, credit to Coach Mike D'Antoni, first of all, and also credit to guys like Harden and Paul for making that work, because Houston is an offensive juggernaut right now, man, and Harden is the centerpiece of all that, and it's going to be interesting to see down the line, like, how it all plays out. Chris, you mentioned you're a big D-Rose fan. You know, obviously I am. If you guys follow my Twitter, we talk about it a lot. I think me and you are both in the same boat when we say Derek brought back that love of the game for not only us, but for the city of Chicago. Speaking as a Bulls fan, the Derek Rose era, when he won MVP, I would say that was probably the most exciting and rewarding era since the Michael Jordan era. Like, this is someone who lived through the Baby Bulls era, who saw some very fun teams with Ben Gordon, Luol Deng, Chris Duan, Kirk Heinrich, and stuff like that. But that year when Derek was on top, you had a legit feeling that we can actually get back to the finals and we can actually win a chip. And then it's like the stuff of a tragedy, man. You know, the knee goes out in game one versus 76ers, and we never quite got back to that level of contending. I know we had that one year where Derek was semi-healthy. We brought in Powell, and Jimmy was the most improved player, and we got to the second round, but we never really reached that pinnacle. You know, like when Derek won the MVP, and we never really reached that status where we can like contend for titles again. And the main thing I think that pisses me off, you know, as a fan watching a game, not necessarily an analyst, but as a fan, they got all these different metrics, these different like numbers that show you how bad a player is. And you know, you look at all these articles, you look at all this stuff on Twitter, like, oh, Derek was 290 out of 292 qualified players for player efficiency rating in the fourth quarter. And I'm reading that, and I'm like I could tell the dude who made up this stat probably never laced up his shoes and got run in an export gym or something. So, you know, my question to you, and you can use Derek as an example, you can use other players as an example. Analytics in sports, do the numbers and analytics have a place specifically in the NBA? Because I know it's a big deal in baseball. I know they're starting to like implement it into football and other sports. But specifically in the NBA, where I don't think it's a sport that really, how should I say this, that really should use the numbers, do you think they have a place in the NBA?
Well, I think that everything, you know, all of the analytics have, you know, some type of place. But it seems like people have let the analytics just kind of take over.
Right.
And I think that's what the issue is. You have to have just context with everything. I mean, even in baseball, it just seems so ridiculous. I mean, you look at baseball, they talk about every day is how, you know, how hard a ball is left the stadium, exit velocity. You know, I mean, they've just gotten so ridiculous with these advanced statistics that, you know, it's become almost overwhelming. But back to the NBA, you look at the NBA game, and you take a shot like Avery Bradley, who I think is probably one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. And the system looks better defensively with him off the floor.
Right.
I mean, how does that work? the same thing with Kawhi Leonard last year. The Spurs were better, had a better defense rating with him off. You know, it just doesn't make sense. There's so many other variables, and like I said, I just think that there needs to be context. And people, I mean, they just keep evolving and just making these stats. And it seems like a lot of times they make them to fit a specific narrative.
Right.
And that's an issue I have as well.
Yeah, man, I think we joked about this on Twitter one time. I remember there was a box score where Marcus Smart had like four turnovers, 1 point, and like three rebounds, and he ended the game with a plus five. Like, you know, how does that happen? You know, it's like it's this context, like you said. I can use Derek as an example again. Last year, the Knicks was playing the Warriors. That man put up 28 points off 50% shooting on Steph Curry, who was the reigning MVP at the time, put 28 on 50% shooting on his head, and he had a PER of like 2 or something, and a minus 4 and a plus minus rating. Like, you people look at that, they're like, oh, he was one of the worst players on the court, when that was completely different from the actual game and what happened over the course of the game. So I think I agree with what you say, that a lot of the times it's used to fit a narrative, to shape a narrative. And I think I caution people that when you're going to use sabermetrics, when you're going to use analytics, always put things into perspective. Always think big picture. You just did something perfect. Like, you show how Avery Bradley's one of the best defensive players in the game, one of the most underrated two-way players in the game, and the analytics show he's a poor defender. Like, how can anyone knowledgeable who watches the game agree with that? Like, let that shape the way they think of Avery Bradley as a player. And I think that's a very good discussion that a lot of people can have over the course of these next few years as analytics and sabermetrics take a bigger role in evaluating players and evaluating how these front offices construct their teams, and it's a truly fascinating discussion. You're from Chicago, obviously, and we talked about the Bulls briefly when we were talking about Derek. You recently tweeted out that this Bulls team is actually fun to watch, so let's talk about it. I agree with you. When you say fun to watch, this, like, they are fun to watch. Like, you know they're not going to be world beaters. They're not going to be an awesome team and win every night, but they're going to play hard for you, which I think has been severely lacking the last, I want to say, three seasons. What's your opinion on that?
I agree, and that's more so what I'm getting at. I mean, you know they're not going to run up to the game.
Right.
They get out there, they play hard, they play together. You know, those Bulls teams the last three seasons, specifically last year, was really tough to watch.
Right.
With Jimmy and D-Wade and all the infighting in the locker room between the young guys and the veterans. Even Derek last year here, I mean, the Bulls were hard to watch. They didn't even make the playoffs that year.
Right.
But, you know, this time around, got these young guys, and I love Pierce as a coach, you know, and what he seems to bring to the table. But he doesn't give the young players a chance.
Right.
And you look at a guy like Chris Dunn, who's coming in, and he's balling now. I mean, he's playing great defense. He's putting up near triple doubles.
Yep.
You look at a guy, David Nwaba, who you know, was a fringe NBA player, and he's out here, you know, making game-changing plays.
Right.
On almost nightly basis. Even yesterday, you look at Chico and Bobby Portis, what they were able to do together. You know, the guys that they're playing faster. They're, you know, they're shooting the ball more. And then you can't forget about the look. Lowry Marketing. I mean, he looks, you know, people were booing that pick, but he looks like he's going to be a really solid young player. And you know, coming up in this draft, there's some franchise-changing players. So if the Bulls can get one of those guys, you know, and pair them with Lowry, you know, you're looking at something promising in the future. And we didn't even touch on Zach LaVine, who's coming back from that ACL tear.
Right.
But, you know, I don't want to speak on him because we all know what the ACL tears can do.
Oh, absolutely, man. And, you know, that seems so common in a lot of, like, you know, dynamic athletes. I know another Chicago native, a promising guy who I still think has a great career ahead of him, Jabari Parker,
sure.
Tore his ACL twice,
yep.
Man. Like, you know,
that's
another discussion we can have, man. I'm not big into this bigger, stronger, faster narrative, especially in a sport like basketball, where I think conditioning is more important than, you know, looking good. Like, you know, being jacked, being able to, like, you know, be... That's another discussion, but I agree with you 100% when it comes to this Bulls team. And you know, I'm a big Bulls fan. I really was, for lack of a better term, I was a stand for last year's team because D Wade is one of my favorite players, and I was happy that he was on the team. But man, it's just something that's eerily satisfying about not watching a player ISO for 20 seconds of the 24-second shot clock. It's something satisfying about ball movement, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, making the extra pass, getting a better shot off instead of, you know, just trying to, like, get a tough shot up and draw a foul, which was, I want to say, 80% of the Bulls' possessions last year. And you hit it on the head with Markkanen, man. That guy's nice. He just outplayed a few games ago the guy Bulls fans are hoping he could become, and that's Kristaps Porzingis. He just outplayed him. And he's a physical 7-footer. He can beat you on the post. He can beat you from the perimeter. I think that, you know, as I can't believe I'm saying this, but we got to give Gar Foreman and Paxson credit for the pick. Like you said, people were booing that pick. But he might turn out to be one of the top three or four players from this draft with Donovan Mitchell, with Dennis Smith Jr. I know it's 25 games is still early to tell, Chris, but, you know, the sample size, like, Lowry has, you know, with the exception, he's not going to win Rookie of the Year because you still got Ben Simmons, you got other guys, but I think he's definitely going to make that all-rookie first team if he keeps this up. What do you think about that?
Well, I can definitely see that happening. He's probably been the second or third best rookie this year for sure. You look at Ben is far and away.
Right.
The rookie of the year. I mean, what he's doing is just ridiculous. I don't think we've seen a rookie be that impactful since Blake Griffin when he came in and dominated the league.
Mm-hmm.
But Lowry is right there. Lowry, you mentioned Donovan Mitchell, Dennis Smith Jr. Those guys, you know, they're all going to turn out to be solid young players, it seems like.
Yeah, man, the league's in good hands, and like I told you, and you mentioned it earlier, it's like competition is coming back, man. There's parity in this league. I look at the East, all eight teams are over 500, all eight teams in the playoffs right now. Same thing in the West, you know what I'm saying? You don't have to, you almost don't have to worry about 36, 37 win teams getting back into the postseason. And I think that with all this young talent coming in, with these players being hungry as they are, it's going to make for a very interesting NBA for the next decade or so. And, you know, shifting from the NBA, I know of you also are a big baseball fan. We've talked about that a lot. So let's wrap it up with baseball. First off, what are your expectations for the Cubs and the White Sox in 2018? And who are your favorite players to watch on both teams?
White Sox are in a good position, it seems. Let's start with them.
Right.
You know, they kind of clean house. They got rid of Chris Sale. You know, they Adam Eaton, all the old guys, brought in the young guys. So the White Sox, they're a couple years away. You know, they brought in Moncada, who is going to be one of the premier young players in the game. He flashed some of that, you know, late last season. I mean, they've got Tim Anderson, who has the potential to be one of the better shortstops in the game. I mean, he's a great athlete. You know, they got some young pitching, a lot of young pitching down in the minors. So I'm looking forward to the White Sox, you know, coming back by the year 2020. You know, it's been tough watching the White Sox lately. I feel bad because I've watched infinitely more Cubs baseball the last couple of years to have the White Sox and the Cubs. You know, they had a disappointing NLCS, you know, losing to the Dodgers like they did.
Right.
You know, the bats just kind of went to sleep that series. I mean, but you look up and down that roster, and there's just so much talent, and it's young talent. From the top down, you're going to get Chris Bryant, who's the MVP in the second year, Anthony Rizzo, Kyle Schwarber, who even got sent down to the minors last year, still, you know, came up and hit 30 home runs last year.
Right.
Addison Russell, who looks like a gold glove shortstop. And then my favorite player in all of baseball right now, Javier Baez, who is a gold glove level shortstop.
Yes,
playing
sir.
Second base for it. So, you know, the Cubs future looks bright. They got to get some starting pitching because, you know, you lose a Lackey and Arrieta. They signed Chatwood from the Rockies. We'll see how that goes. But they need to bolster that rotation. They did go get Brandon Morrow yesterday, who was a light out versus the Cubs in that Dodgers series.
Right.
So they're doing their thing to bolster up that you know that rotation. So we'll see. I mean, Cubs right now is championship or bust. I mean, that's what it is. And that sounds crazy to say after the Cubs have been down for so long, but it's really championship or nothing at this point, and it seems like it will be that way for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, you mentioned that, Chris. Perfect segue, 3 to 5 years. So, by my count, 2020 is 2 years away. So, what are your opinions on a potential Cubs-White Sox World Series in the future?
I would love to see that. If this White Sox pitching turns out like it should, then, you know, there's a potential for it. But you look around the Major League Baseball, those used to the Astros that won it all.
Right.
They are a very young team with Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve and George Springer. So, you know, those guys will have a lot to say about it. The Yankees have wasn't bolstered there. You know, they're off the, you know, they got Giancarlo Stanton.
Yep.
And Aaron Judge in the middle of their lineup. So, you know, we're a long way away from 2020. I'm hoping the White Sox can get to that level. But they got a lot of road to go before they can get there.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. But at the end of the day, as someone who's watched both teams, man, I got to give, and I'm a Cubs fan, as you know, but I got to give the White Sox their credit. Rick Hahn has done an amazing job acquiring all this young talent. I think the best deal he made, in my opinion, was what he got for Jose Quintana. He got Eloy Jimenez, who I think, that dude, I'm telling you, man, he's going to be a monster at Guaranteed Rate Field. You're going to get him in that bandbox. It would not surprise me if he hit 35 or 40 home runs on a yearly basis. I really think that team with Kopech, Jimenez, Moncada, Giolito, Lopez, all these young guys coming up, I think they will be right there with the Houston Astros down the line. Like Houston, they did it the same way the White Sox did. Just
You can't forget about Blake Rutherford, Zach Collins,
right?
They why did I have prospects? So I mean, it's just a matter of those guys panning out. You know, baseball seems to be the toughest sport for prospects to pan out. You know, there's so many different levels to the game that you have to get to. You know, basketball, you know, usually people have a really good idea of how good a guy's going to be,
right?
You know, from watching them in college and high school. Baseball is so different in that regard. So, you know, it's just a matter of all these guys panning out. But if they can get 75 to 80% of the fan out, watch out for the White Sox for sure.
And I agree with you 100%, Chris. And being a Chicago native, let me tell you something. This city is a lot more fun during the summer and fall when both baseball teams are good. I remember in 2008, the last time they both made the playoffs, and this city was electric. You know, the teams that they actually bottomed out of the playoffs quite drastically. I know the Cubs were swept and the White Sox lost in four games, but you know, just the aura of the city was something that I want to come back here real soon, because it's a city in need of that, and you know, it's just a lot more better. It's a lot more fun when both baseball teams are good. Chris, I want to take this time out to say thank you again for joining my show, man. You are what I envisioned when I said, let's give the fans a voice. I think a lot of my listeners are going to appreciate hearing your perspective as opposed to, you know, hearing the journalistic approach to it or the analytical approach to it. Someone who watches the game for the enjoyment of it, and someone who also watches it with a perspective and doesn't try to, you know, shape a narrative. You did a real good job, man. You know, I would love to have you on my show again in the near future. And I thank you again for taking the time out to join. Now the floor is yours to, like, say anything, update everyone on what projects you got going on, and, you know, do your thing, man.
No, thanks so much for having me on. You know, supposed to just have me. I'm a banker by trade, so this was a fun giveaway. I'm out off the sick today, so to get on here and hang out with you for a minute, you know, kind of made my day.